yes, the boys on Cairo Nights. Last stop of the Pacific Northwest for straight talk and no-nonsense political analysis and commentary. We all know the legend of the boys back there. St. Frank Shires in the newsroom. Shane Ones and Twos Peterson on the Ones and Twos. And Dr. Captain Jack Stein, Esquire. They sure do make up the best darn nightly news program around these parts. And you hear anyone say otherwise, you tell them. Dangerous Dave Ross said so. That'll set him straight.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Cairo Nights. Frank Shires, blah, 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 blah. Let's try that one again,
Let's try that again, blah, blah. I told Shane he should make it he should do a Shane drop with that. I think it'd be great.
Oh, it's happening. Don't worry.
We're going to make it into a drop.
Go, Frank, good.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I am going to, in the recap, we're going to get deep into how arbitrary these restrictions are just moving all over. This is so arbitrary, Frank. It's like, it's okay, we're going to do phase three, but we're going to do phase two, but it's going to be this percentage instead of that percentage. It's so annoying, and we are going to get into that in the recap. Frank Shires, today is the worst day of the week for me. It's Friday. I'm going to miss you all weekend. I'm going to miss Shane all weekend. I'm going to miss the listenership all weekend. It's a sad day for me.
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it is. It's Friday.
All right, and on that happy note, let's get into the recap, Shane.
Sounds good, man.
Jack's recap. Today's biggest headlines in 15 minutes or less.
All right, so I was thinking about an article that came out back in January. I haven't thought about it in a while, but for some reason it floated just right back into my brain earlier today. It's an article from The Insider from January 13th, and it said that a majority of Americans surveyed believe that the United States is in the midst of a cold civil war, and they go on to survey something like 33,000 people, and they say half of these people believed that government leaders and journalists are purposefully misleading the public. And they were saying that 3 out of 4 people do not properly vet the information that they find online, according to report. And over half of people surveyed put more faith in CEOs and companies than the government. And it's a really interesting article. And it basically talks about how we're all kind of in our own little information silo and how we're all in our own little bubble and how we're not communicating anymore. All of the things that we already know. But I ask you this question. Why are we not communicating anymore? Why is there this barrier between you and I? Why? Let's say that you think that I'm a total right-wing hack. Why is there a barrier between you and I where we can't come to some kind of agreement on the smallest of things? We can't come to some kind of mutual consensus on certain issues. I think it has a lot to do with ambiguity. It has a lot to do with people not really sure what's going on in the world right now, mostly because of COVID-19. Mostly because nobody knows what the next 3 months is going to look like. Nobody knows what the next 6 months is going to look like. It's very unpredictable. So lots of information going around about currency inflation. Lots of information going around just money going up and up and up. So I think that most people are looking at these issues, and because they are ambiguous and because they are vague, it's hard to kind of see where we can find common ground on certain issues. Like when Jay Inslee came out today and he updated the criteria for counties staying in phase three, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are still convinced COVID-19 is a complete and total hoax. We're completely overblowing this entire issue. Why are we making this such a big deal? Why do we have these arbitrary phase systems where we move up and down based on this or that? It seems to make no sense whatsoever. I'll tell you why half of the people don't trust their politicians and they don't trust journalists, because they don't feel like they have your best interest in mind. They don't feel like they have their best interest in mind. They feel like it's arbitrary. They feel like it's very vague, and they feel like it's useless. That is why. So for everybody out there, whenever I talk to anybody who's kind of pro restrictions and these arbitrary lines about, well, it can be at 50% capacity or 25% capacity, or we need to have the students at 3 feet or the student at 6 feet, it begins to feel kind of just useless. Why? I mean, of course, why? Why isn't anybody actually making any hard decisions about it? I'll give you an example of something that really stuck out to me this last week, something that really kind of stuck in my craw about the news cycle. It's that story about the school board members asking the city not to clear homeless camps on school property. We talked about it on Tuesday. We talked about it on Wednesday. We talked about it yesterday. There's something about this story in particular that just really sticks out to me as to why there is a divide between people and culture today. Doesn't matter if it's in the state of Washington, doesn't matter if it's at the national level. There's some kind of odd divide between us in which normal, average, everyday people, again, who might be frustrated about this arbitrary phase system as it pertains to COVID-19, they then look at something like homeless people using drugs on school property. And they say, okay, well, maybe we can all agree about that. Maybe we could all be on the same page as it pertains to homeless people using drugs in schools. Wouldn't we want to get all those people out? Wouldn't we just say, okay, we have to sweep that park? And when they read about the school board saying, we want to have compassion for these poor people, they think, okay, well, we're clearly on two separate pages. We're not even speaking the same language. I thought that everybody could get on the same page with caring for children, with caring for kids. And then when they have to hear Mayor Jenny Durkin coming out and saying, well, we're going to follow the CDC guidelines, it gets really frustrating. Here's a little bit of Mayor Jenny Durkin talking about that.
CDC regulations said we had to leave people in place, and it's having significant impacts on communities.
Yeah, of course it is. Homeless people in school property. Yeah, of course it is. I mean, what are you, insane? And you come out and say, well, we have to follow the CDC guidelines. It's the same. It's the same thing. You want to know why people are so divided is because you look at something like that and you say, I don't care what the CDC says about, quote unquote, leaving people in place. I don't care. They should be moved. And then when you have this arbitrary phase system that Inslee instituted and say, well, phase 3 and phase 4 and phase 2 and phase 1, people go, I don't care. My business is suffering. Or I don't care. I want to have 50% capacity in my business. This is where the divide comes from. And it gets to a much deeper idea in the difference between human beings. Some people, myself included, happen to think that government does not have your best interests in mind at all times. And they couldn't possibly. There's no way that Inslee could say, okay, well, it's okay for a business which has a 30% capacity, or excuse me, is able to hold 30 people in it at a time. They should be at 25% capacity. And then this Costco should be at 50% capacity. There's just no way. You get lost in it. So continuing on this idea, the reason that we have this divide is because we're not all operating off of the same information. We're just not. Part of that is because of where people choose to get their information. I'll give you another example. Anthony Fauci was on with Anderson Cooper the other day, and he admits that cases are down and deaths are down in COVID-19, and then he talks about vaccines, and it's very arbitrary, and people have nothing to latch on to. Here's Anthony Fauci on Anderson Cooper yesterday.
Well, certainly deaths are coming down. Hospitalizations are coming down. We're seeing hospitalizations, as you alluded to a moment ago, a bit more skewed to younger people than it were several months ago. But the number that is disturbing, Anderson, is the number of cases each day. When we had the big spike that we discussed so many times that went way up to, you know, 200,000 to 300,000 cases per day. Then it came back down. But now it's plateaued at a disturbingly high level. The last count yesterday was 63,000 cases in a single day. When you're at that level, there is the risk of getting a surge back up. So the way we're looking at it now,
I think that when people hear that phrase, when they hear the phrase surge, and when they hear the phrase restrictions coming down the pipeline again, and when they hear phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, phase 4, I think people get very tense. And I think people begin to think about what we saw last year. I think people begin to think about the something 15,000 businesses, according to Yelp, that will never come back again. I think people begin to worry. People begin to become very stressed out. I don't think it matters if it's about COVID-19. I don't think if it matters if it's about homeless people on school property, people begin to worry about, again, about how vague and ambiguous all of that is. What is my life going to look like 3 months from now? What is my life going to look like 4 months from now? There's all this kind of stuff going on at the societal level. There's all this kind of stuff going on at the cultural level that divides people even more so than something like COVID-19. There's all this kind of cultural talk about, we talked about it this last week, about toxic masculinity, toxic whiteness, when we were talking about the Village Theater coming out and releasing that job application that was talking about toxic whiteness and toxic masculinity. This is what I mean when I say that we're not even really speaking the same language anymore. We're not even on the same page anymore when it comes to what you should put on a job application. Forget about COVID-19 for a second. We're not even on the same page when it comes to how we describe our own lives. There was a really interesting audio clip that came out from the BBC recently. Eric Bolling, he's a former Fox commentator. They were talking about the Georgia voting rights bill, which, again, has just been huge this week. And because nobody has read the bill, everybody has this huge opinion about it. But he was talking to a woman named Aisha Mills about the voting rights bill. And she just said, hey, you're racist. She just flat out says, I don't appreciate you talking about the voting rights bill. And you are coming across like you are a racist. And she basically forces him off the show. Here's what that sounded like.
And everything that these voting laws stand for and what they look like are reminiscent to the Jim Crow policies that my family's lived under. This, every single thing about it. So this is all about racial discrimination. And how dare you try to act like you are somehow a proponent of black people in businesses just to make a point and to try to create a wedge. It's ignorant and it's just disrespectful.
That's disgusting. I'm done. Put me off. That's disgusting. I am nowhere near anything you're painting me to be, and the problem with American politics is exactly that. Because I'm white, you think I'm racist? That's BS. I'm
okay.
Done.
Eric, will you just stay for this question? So the question we've got, Aisha, is, stay for one question, Eric. Let me put this to you.
I don't know why I'm staying here. I don't know why.
I'm not going to apologize for being offended. Aisha, okay.
And then he leaves and the interview is over and we will never have a casual conversation about SB 202 ever again. This is what I'm talking about when I say that article that came out, we're talking about this kind of cold civil war going on. Yeah, it's something feels like it's a brewing. There's something about this intersection of COVID-19 and all of the talk around George Floyd and Derek Chauvin and all of the talk around this Georgia bill and all of the talk around the Major League Baseball deciding to move from Cobb County in Georgia to Colorado. There's something going on where people are becoming more and more divided on these kinds of cultural issues, not just even cultural issues, but what kind of role does government play in my life? So if it's coming from all angles, if it's coming from Inslee talking about phase 3, phase 4, if it's coming from Jenny Durkin saying, hey, I'm going to follow the CDC guidelines, I'm not going to kick those homeless people out of that school. If it's coming from Aisha Mills yelling at Eric Bolling saying, oh, well, you're a racist because of the way that you feel about SB 202, the Georgia voting rights bill. Yeah, there's some kind of division happening right now in front of us in real time that we can't even really talk about these things without them being so heated and so contentious and so big. Is everything a hill to die on? Because it seems like this last week in particular, everything has been a hill to die on. Everything has been a huge issue. Joe Biden comes out with his gun control executive orders. It is now suddenly a huge issue. It seems to never stop. And I do wonder if we are ripping ourselves apart, if we're just kind of ripping the country apart on things that people should normally just be on the same page with. On things that, let's just take COVID-19 restrictions and phases and all that other kind of stuff. You let people live their lives and you let people make the decisions that are best for them and their family. When it comes to something like homeless people on school property, you say, no, we don't allow homeless people to do drugs on school property. When it comes to two adults having a casual conversation about SB 202, the Georgia voting rights bill, you say, okay, well, you and I might disagree about it, but that doesn't necessarily make you a racist. That's what it is, I think, over the last week, I think I've discovered this, is that we have become kind of nasty and we've become very mean and everything is such a big deal. Nothing anymore is just kind of subject to conversation. Nothing anymore is just kind of, we're just talking about it in the way that I might talk about it with Shane or the way that I might talk about it with Frank. Or if I fill in on Dory Monson's show, the way that I might talk about it with Nicole. We all have different political views, but we don't automatically attribute negative motive or malice because of the difference in our views. So when I go back to that article from The Insider talking about this cold civil war, and again, they talk about media and how they've contributed to that, I would submit to you that it's much more about how we no longer just view each other as neighbors and how we no longer just kind of view each other as human beings. So if I come out against Jay Inslee and I say, Inslee, you need to stop this arbitrary phase system with 50% capacity or 25% capacity. It's ridiculous and it's silly and it proves nothing. I mean, is that worthy of someone that's like, Jack Stein, you're going to kill people. Jack Stein, you're going to get people killed. If I talk about SB 202 and I say this is in no way, shape, or form the bill that people have made it out to be, if you, Jack Stein, you're an awful racist. How dare you? If I come out and I say, hey, you know, I used to be a drug addict and these homeless people who are sleeping on school property are taking advantage of people's kindness, and people go, Jack Stein, you're not compassionate at all. How dare you? It's no way to have a conversation. It's just no way to talk about these issues. There's just no way to do it. And unfortunately, I feel like it's going to get worse and not better. And I'll give you another example before we have to get out of here to talk to Chris Sullivan. There was an article from Fox News talking about how George Clooney decided to send the lawyers of George Floyd's, the prosecution in the Derek Chauvin case. He decided to send them a letter. And that letter, part of it was, I don't necessarily want to be too mean to George Clooney, but part of it was pretty bad. But in one section in particular, he says to the lawyers, he said, you should tell them that if Derek Chauvin feels so confident in that George Floyd did not die from a drug overdose, that he should volunteer during his case to get down on the floor in that courtroom and let somebody come and put their knee on his neck for 9 minutes and 29 seconds and be able to see if he can survive. So this is the way that children think. This is the way that children think about really complex issues. Eye for an eye. You did it to him, now we do it to you. And that's just not the way I think any country can move forward. If you want to do this eye for an eye kind of thinking, if you want to do this kind of vengeance thinking, it's just not really going to get us anywhere. So I guess my suggestion for this weekend is try to think about, in what way can we talk about things like COVID-19 phase 3, phase 4? What kind of way can we talk about drug addicts being around small children in schools? What kind of way can we talk about these issues, or even SB 202? How can we talk about these issues without them becoming so heated to the point where we just can't talk about them anymore? I'm Jack Stein. You're listening to Cairo Nights. We have to take a really quick break. When we get back, Chris Sullivan will be coming on and we'll be talking about the expansion going on I-5. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back. On the line right now is Cairo Radio's own personal traffic hero, Chris Sullivan, the man we all turn to with so many questions about traffic and why it is so awful. We're going to talk about highway expansion, which is, Chris Sullivan, as you said, is a very sexy topic. But before we get into that, there is no greater waste of human life than sitting in traffic. There is no, you are literally watching your life drain in front of your eyes. It's like that scene in The Princess Bride with the machine that takes your life from you. There is, in my humble opinion, the number one priority of everybody who's at the city planning level, city council, mayor, Jay Inslee, number one priority should be, how do I get somebody from A to B in the least amount of time so that I can literally save their life? And instead, we're talking about tents outside of elementary schools and homeless people outside of elementary schools as if that is a normal thing that we should be dealing with. So, Chris Sullivan, before we get into your deep, dark thoughts about traffic, what is going on with the expansion? What is the deal with this highway expansion?
Yeah, well, this is something that's really interesting. One of the worst spots in Seattle is getting into Seattle.
Yeah.
That I-5 northbound drive that people are used to, for no apparent reason, any time of the day or night, any day of the week, you'll be backed up from the West Seattle Bridge going into downtown. That's just the way it is, because the way the city was planned, the way the city is built, the fact that there are two lakes and a Puget Sound there. It's, I mean, whoever decided the Denny party should have stayed in Tacoma and built the city there instead of coming on up and building it where they did.
Yeah.
Because they really screwed us over. Because our geography leads to most of our trouble. But on I-5, what we have is you have, are the express lanes open? Yes, no. Oh, they're not. I've got to move over one lane.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a Seneca exit only lane. I have to now get over one lane, and then people coming on from I-90 and the city entrances now are moving over one lane to the left and right. And there's all this extra weaving and merging there as we pinch down into the heart of downtown Seattle. And so what they're going to do, the state, the Department of Transportation, there's just the slightest bit of room underneath the convention center where Seneca exits before University Street joins, where they're going to widen the freeway there using the existing room that they have and give us about 1,500 feet of more lane. I know that doesn't sound like a lot,
yeah,
but what it does is it keeps the freeway goes from three through lanes to two through lanes right there, and then three again after that 1,500 feet. They're going to keep it at three full through lanes by changing Seneca to just an exit, but that lane will continue through that 1,500 feet on the left-hand side of the road that's there right now. So that way we get just a little bit more capacity out of what was not a lot of room. And so hopefully that'll help get a lot more traffic through, even with just a little change like this.
Yeah. And my question would be, is that do you think in your many years of analysis of this, do you think that this is one, cost effective and worthwhile, or is this kind of like, well, we can maybe kind of sort of give you another 1,500 feet and we'll hope for the best?
Well, it's kind of a little bit of both, because at least before the last couple of years, the state really wouldn't have even considered something like this. And what we've seen over the last couple of years is the state trying to find little fixes that they think will go a little, get a lot bang for maybe a little bit of buck. Like, for instance, we see them allowing shoulder driving during peak use, which I know is something that other parts of the country have done, where you kind of beef up the shoulder a little bit and then allow that to become a lane during certain times of the day. So that's great. It's like, wow, a great idea. We can have a little more capacity. In fact, right now there's a big construction project on I-90 between Bellevue's Eastgate neighborhood over to Issaquah, where they're connecting an on-ramp to an off-ramp, which had a little space, and they're just connecting that lane so people will have a full another mile's worth of merging ability there. So that's something that won't cost a lot, but gives them the opportunity to prevent extra weaving and merging. And that's really what we have. The way the freeways in this area were set up early on did not anticipate us growing the way we did. And we have exits and entrances on the left and the right. All within certain short amounts of period of some time. So it just creates all this unnecessary weaving. And so I'm happy the state's at least looking to try to do little things like this that will hopefully give us a little bit of benefit. I mean, any less time spent choking on the exhaust from the person in front of you is better.
So as you know, Chris Sullivan, I used to live in the Bay Area in California. And one of the biggest mistakes that they did in that area is very similar to what we see now in Seattle, but also in the state of Washington, where they have this infrastructure and they say, we can't change anything. We're not going to reroute anything. We're not going to change any streets. We're not going to make this a one way. We're not going to make this the opposite way. We're not going to change anything. We're just going to maybe sort of kind of hope we can squeeze more people in here or there. And it never works. And my thought is, why don't you get some new city planners in and just make a tough decision in saying this this route can only be either a one way or it has to have exits that only go in this direction. We just have to make tough decisions, as opposed to saying, well, maybe we can kind of sort of add an exit here and add 1500 feet here. And I think you just have to redo the entire system. And maybe it takes 5 years, but eventually we get to the point where we're no longer sucking the life out of people as they watch their lives literally drain from their bodies sitting in traffic. I hate it. I hate it.
Five years, that would barely get through the environmental process here in Seattle.
I know.
Are you kidding me?
I know.
Regulations and the process that needs to get done.
Yeah.
We wouldn't even get to engineering by that.
Right.
but I mean, the problem with that is, again, I joke about the founders of the city of Seattle.
Yeah.
They just picked a bad place. I mean, we don't have the geography is the number one problem. And until you start thinking about it, I mean, that's just really it. The beauty of this whole area and the way it's all set up really also screws us when it comes to that. And also, I mean, if you're going to be in Seattle, what are we going to do? Buy up a whole bunch of space and widen or change things? We can't. The Department of Transportation can't afford to buy out the property considering the values there. I mean, look how much money it cost the Sound Transit to extend light rail with all the houses they've had to condemn.
Yeah.
That was one of the reasons why the project to Linwood is $500 million over budget, because they had to buy all this extra property. And when the property values were going through the roof,
I mean,
no one anticipated that. But yeah, that's another component of this, is they can't afford to buy the land to try to do what they want to do anyway.
One of the things, there was this crazy notion years and years and years ago that this engineer had, where he said, I could come in and I could make the Golden Gate Bridge have another set of lanes underneath it. And everybody called him a nutbag and everybody thought he was insane. And now you're beginning to hear that theory coming back, where people are saying, well, what are we going to do about the Bay Bridge? What are we going to do about the Golden Gate Bridge? And I'm so glad that I don't live in California anymore, because it's a nightmare. But now I find myself in a new nightmare with exactly the same problem. The geography. How do you fit more people into a space that doesn't allow more of it? I'm thinking, Chris Sullivan, that we need to have some kind of either new tunnel system, or you got to redo the entire grid, because I understand there's a money aspect to it as well. But the system right now, I feel like it's just like, it's like adding matchsticks on top of a matchstick house and hoping that the whole thing doesn't go up in flames.
Yeah. And what we've seen, as you mentioned, the Bay Bridge, is a lot of people are talking about, engineers are thinking outside a lot of different things. One of the worst bridges in our area is the Aurora Bridge.
Oh yeah.
And you take your life in your hand, because those lanes are so small on there.
Yeah.
And one thing they've talked about, and I'm not sure how feasible, is they're talking about maybe get rid of the sidewalks and put the sidewalks underneath.
Oh, wow.
Give them their own, which would allow to build out and actually make the lanes reasonably sized, so that would increase the safety there. And then you would still also be able to allow pedestrians and bikes, but they'd have their own area underneath. So yeah, there. I mean, the creativity they have to come with now when you're working inside of a constrained space is very interesting. And you're right. I mean, we're still dealing with 1950s, 60s ideas of how we get around. I know light rail, I mean, for all the garbage it gets from people, you know, in terms of how much money it's wasted or this or that. I mean, people have very high opinions or bad opinions of Sound Transit and light rail. I mean, they're going to tunnel under downtown Seattle to extend over to Ballard. I mean, if we can move people in different ways that way and light rail works for you. I mean, today they just announced when we're going to have service opening to Northgate, which is kind of the furthest point north right now. Hopefully that will start getting some actual commuter type people, because right now it just goes to the U district on the north end. But that could be a part of it. But
Chris Sullivan, we got to get out of here, but you're the best as per usual. I think what we should do in the future is that they should just hire you and I to redo the entire grid. And we'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. My college has been sending me, my former college has been sending me email after email after email today. I think their server might be broken, and I was trying to figure out why are they emailing me so much, and then I realized, oh, they want my money. They want donations.
Yes. Of course they do.
So they give me a scholarship to go there for free. I gladly accept it, and then I leave, and then years later they say, oh, hey, by the way, you think you might be able to slide us a couple of ducats, Jack Stein? You think you might be able to slide us a couple of dollar bills?
Hey, Jack, we heard you're a radio show now, big radio show guy.
Yeah, they must be listening.
How about some for the alma mater or the radio program here?
Dude, we like that podcast.
By the way, they're having a alumni week, and they have representatives. They've got doctors. They've got people who work in entertainment. They've got a tennis player. All these people that think represent the best of their alumnus, however you say that. And no invitation for Jack Stein to come and talk about radio. Didn't get it in the mail. So maybe if I had received a little invitation in the mail to go talk to the college kids, I might have... I might be a little bit more amenable to distributing some money back to the college in the form of a donation. However, I was not invited to Alumni Week, so I will not be going there, and they will not be getting my money, Frank Shires. That's
there
what
it
I
is.
Can say about that.
I get it. Oh, I think it's fine. I paid a one-time $150. I wrote a check for $150 to the Cougs, to Wazoo, back like 30 years ago. And
yeah.
So they don't harass me with any letters. They never have asked for money since, which I think is just grand.
I got to maybe try that out. And speaking of trying that out,
yes.
There's an HIV vaccine trial that shows 97% effectiveness in humans.
Wow.
And I thought that this was amazing because 30 years ago, even 35 years ago, HIV/AIDS would have been totally a death sentence. And now there is a potential vaccine that is allegedly 97% effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how did nobody know about this? Why aren't we talking about this more? And then I found out the craziest thing, Frank Shires, Shane Peterson, you would never believe me unless you actually looked this up. This vaccine is a result of Operation Warp Speed from President Trump. Could
that
you
makes
imagine?
Perfect sense. Sure. No, seriously, it does.
Right? It's amazing.
Because the nature of the coronavirus and the fact that it is constantly changing. What is it, the rDNA or MDA type vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine. Wow.
So the crazy thing is that for all of the flack that former President Donald J. Trump gets, inadvertently, an operation that he started that was his administration's brainchild led to the development of a vaccine that is 97% effective against HIV. And
wow.
It's just amazing, amazing news, and they're going to start human trials very soon, and it's all going to be very good, and we should all be very happy about this. And so what I wanted to ask you, Frank Shires, and also Shane, is that if you could take a vaccine to fix anything, what would you fix? And because this is a very personal question, I will go first.
Oh, okay.
I have a horrific toe fungus. It is horrific. It is
this.
A toenail fungus.
Why do you
fungus?
Keep talking about this on the radio?
He's talked about it before. It's a critical part
Come
of his
on.
Life.
I can like smell it through the microphone when you talk
yeah, he,
about
no,
it.
No, it doesn't
thing,
smell,
he
though.
He waves it under his Pomeranian's nose.
I've been trying to get it treated through Dr. Z, but now that I don't live in the state, Dr. Z has to treat me over state lines. So, but my point is that when I finally got the cream for it, and I've been applying the cream to it, and now it's finally going away, but it's not going away fast enough. So I would get rid of my horrific toe fungus. Frank Shires, what would you get rid of if you could take anything and cure it with a vaccine?
Being my extended age, I would really enjoy it if we could manage to come up with a vaccine that helps with memory. Because the thing that I get most frustrated by as I get older is my inability to remember things that are relatively recent. Long-term memory seems to be pretty sharp still, but, man, the stuff, like, I'll try and come up with a word or a name, and I know that I just have to wait. It's going to be a while, maybe a day.
Slow it down.
Yeah.
And then it'll finally come to you.
when I'm in the shower or something, when I least need it.
Shane Peterson, what would you, if you could fix anything, what would you fix with a vaccine?
I would fix dyslexia with the vaccine.
Oh, amen, brother.
Yeah, I would. If I was able to be on the same spectrum and the same level as everybody else when it came to reading and writing, everybody would be dangerous. I wouldn't be pressing buttons here. I'd be still in school coming up with new theories for communication studies, being a scholar, and I'd be smoking everybody. That's for sure.
Or, Shane, you could do what I do, and you never learn how to read, and you just convince everybody else that you can do the job that you have been assigned to do. We have to take a really quick break. When we get back, we have a new Shane drop from Alex Jones that will blow your mind, and something that should have been headline news across the nation that just went totally under the radar. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back.